With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome along. It's this week's Writer's Routine, where our guest is Adam Folds. The Booker Prize shortlisted author is here to talk through his working day and think about what it's like to explore philosophy rather than genre in a story. Also, we talk about plotting through character and how and why poetry is different to writing a novel.
There is only really the lightning strike in writing poetry. There is not much you can do in the way of research or editing extensively. It's you're much more in a moment, a more molten moment of a kind of pure creativity that you then kind of wrestle with and shape perhaps more afterwards.
So stick around, it's on the way in this week's Writer's Routine. Right, thank you so much for being there. Cheers for giving us a listen. My name is Dan Simpson. This is Writer's Routine, the show that does what it says on the tin. It takes you through the writing day of an author to see what they do every day to get their idea from the head down onto the page. Now, I was thinking this the other day. It's baffling, right? We're over 50 episodes through now. So if you've been with us since the beginning and you haven't yet passed this secret on that you've found, it's fine. It can stay between us with your proper name, but you can write reviews anonymously, you know. I'd love you to do it. I'd love you to head over to the Apple Podcast Store and help us out by leaving Writer's Routine a review. So easy to do. Head over there, search for us, drop 5 stars if you can, and then write something useful. That way, aspiring authors who need the advice from our authors can get the advice from our authors. Also, if you're not yet, make sure that you are subscribing to the show. That way, new episodes will automatically download each week. You don't need to go online, worry about finding them. Now, this week, our guest is Adam Folds. He's a poet, a novelist. He was shortlisted for the Booker Prize for The Quickening Maze, and he's just published his 5th book. I think I'm right in saying that. 5th book. Dream Sequence. It's all about Henry Banks, an actor who becomes tangled in a strange relationship with the recently divorced Kristen. Now, Adam says it explores what it's like to live in our current moment with its porous borders between inner and outer life. It's a stunning, terrifying drama all about psychological damage, stalking, and the perils of celebrity. Not just Adam, a few reviews in there as well. And as you can get from that short blurb, it's literary fiction, which will be interesting to chat about with him, because normally we have pretty specific genre authors on the show that write more commercial fiction. So I'm keen to understand what makes people write in different styles and with different purposes, what they're trying to figure out in their writing. Now, we talk about language as well, about tone, and what it's like to plot the whole story using pretty much only your characters. We'll get some of your writing tips in the middle as well, and a little bit of help from a British writing legend, which is on the way after we dive into it with Adam Folds. And very quickly, before we start, he's quite a philosophical and thoughtful author. So listen out if you can for the silence, when you can almost hear the cogs in his brain churning away, trying to think of a perfect answer that covers the style of writing that he's doing, honestly, better than many others at the moment. I think that's quite a joy in this chat. Listen out for it. Now we start, as always, with what Adam sees around him in the place where he sits down to write.
I see my desk in front of me, on which will be a selection of books that are particularly alive and relevant for me at that moment, and a couple of odd little objects and a few postcards of different artworks generally. And up on the wall in front of my desk, I have two prints, one a photograph of an Eva Hesse artwork, and a print of a Claude Lorraine engraving of the 18th century. And those two things kind of communicate with each other in a sort of interesting way. But mostly it's as much as it can be, a white and fairly bare space that I write in now.
And is it all done on the laptop? Are you paper and pen man?
I'm very much a paper and pen person, first of all. I think that comes probably from the course that my writing took over my life, in that I was a poet, first of all. And there may be poets who write their poems onto laptops, but I wouldn't even have had a word processor when I started. And it never felt natural to me to write in that way. I like the organic, almost kind of biological feel of pen and ink, and feeling unpressured, that it's my own property, that it's an extension of me. A laptop has a kind of impatience to it, just in the sort of blinking of a cursor, and also is riddled with the possibility of distraction, which has to be carefully curtailed. So first draft is longhand, and then the typing up into a Word document is a moment where where the manuscript sort of takes shape properly, I'd say, for the first time. Quite a lot of changes are made at that point. So that first laptop document is usually quite a long way along the process of towards where the thing's going to end up.
You mentioned distractions a second ago.
Yes.
Let's quickly take some time to talk about the potential distractions that impede your day, really. Is there anything that you do find yourself being taken away from your work for? Or the reverse of that, do you think there are any little eccentricities, maybe quirks that are particular to you, that actually help you get your story down?
Yeah, I have... I'm not sure how interesting this is. I have my drinks through the day, my coffee at a certain time. I'm distracted in the way that most people are, by kind of internet research rabbit holes and associative distractions. What do I do to keep myself in it? Often it's those books I'm reading. So often I start the day before I can get down to writing. I will be reading for a while to kind of get my bearings, to reignite my kind of linguistic imagination. That's an important element. If it's a good working day, not to be sound too sort of facetious, I go into a room and I disappear. And it doesn't kind of, in that state of absorption, it doesn't really matter exactly when and how things happen. Typically, as I say, I will start with reading. I will write for chunks of time, often quite sort of pausily, taking breaks. I have found that writing at like the highest pitch of kind of creation of new work that is worthwhile requires a very high level of concentration and can't really be done for much more than 4 hours a day. So when those hours occur exactly in the day is kind of, it doesn't matter too much. You have to kind of catch the wave. there's a nice letter of Keats's where he talks about how strange inspiration is in how it interacts with the body, and how, you know, being a great poet, as he obviously was dependent on, you know, how soon after lunch he was trying to be a great poet. So those sorts of things actually shape your working day, your kind of biological rhythms.
Do you ever try and force that out? I think one of the points of the show is to try and chart how creatives who make money from their creativity force themselves and their ideas to be put down and to be forced through in a daily working environment. So you're saying that you kind of work for 4 hours whenever that comes.
Yeah,
how do you know when that is going to come?
I see. Well, I mean, that 4 hours, I'm talking about the particularly that sense of inspired and consistent and productive new work. That is one kind of work that writing requires. There's also research, there's note-taking. But essentially, you know, you are hoping for lightning to strike. And you obviously can't make it strike you, but it helps to go out in a storm with a metal pole. So by which I mean you have to put yourself in the way of the possibility of that stuff coming to you, which means getting to your desk, which means when you're not inspired, still kind of chewing at the ideas, the characters, the possible structure, worrying at it, reading things that might inspire it, and generally being kind of vigilantly present for the work when it wants to come.
When you finished writing for, as you say, your 4 or so hours a day, do you put it to bed so you can get on with the rest of your life, or are things always, you know, ticking over? Do you find yourself perhaps going back before you go to bed later at night and quickly jotting down ideas that maybe you didn't have earlier?
That happens quite regularly. Occasionally, what, you know, perceive as a kind of disadvantage of the writing life is that it's never not present to some extent, and it's not really possible or useful to turn in a kind of low energy day and still kind of get away with that long term in the way that you can in a certain kind of office jobs or whatever, where you do what's required. This writing is a job where you, in order for it to be interesting, in order for it to work, you are up against the kind of limits of yourself. I think it's a bit like being a concert musician or a chess player or something. You're working at the limits of your capabilities, and as I say, it's not contained, so you don't leave it behind very easily. It's always there in your thoughts, and if it's a difficult and worrying period in the process of working on a book, then that can be occasionally kind of cloudy and debilitating feeling of kind of prolonged struggle that you can't fight your way out of. At other times, it's a very wonderful thing to feel accompanied by, in that your thoughts, when they're interesting and exciting, have value and have a destination, and they kind of transmute your experience and your perceptions into something lasting and meaningful.
Well, let's talk about that then. Lasting and meaningful. You mentioned earlier the word worthwhile.
Mm.
What does that mean to you? What makes one of these stories worthwhile? What makes it lasting and meaningful?
That's interesting. Well, the easiest category of that to kind of deal with is just kind of physical intellectual perception of the world, you know, the recording of the world in a bright and vivid way, which gives the reader and oneself that sense of re-experiencing something very vividly, having one's own experience returned in a in an arrested and arresting way. There are, with my books, I tend to work with a kind of philosophical question or a set of concerns at their centre that I am investigating and thinking through and kind of dramatising through. And so there's a sense that you're accumulating, saying something about that in the course of a novel. And there's also, I guess, there's an emotional, psychological reach, which is kind of overlaps with that, release rather than reach, that overlaps with that, but is not the same as that. But it's also that just a straightforward sense that it's being absorbed into an object, the book, the novel, that is developing its own internal kind of cohesion and its own charisma, and will take its place as an object in the world that people will interact with.
I've spoken to a lot of perhaps more commercially minded authors, if you don't mind me saying that, the paperbacks that will be read on holiday.
Sure.
And I think they perceive their stories in a different way to you.
Like, yeah.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think, if I had asked them the previous question,
yes,
I very much doubt that they would answer about philosophy and about leaving this, you know, this lasting idea that can be gone back to and considered. Why do you think you view stories in that thoughtful manner, whereas other authors perhaps don't?
I think we're all working from this on the same basis originally, which is the pleasure principle. The writing that I have always enjoyed from my teens, when I first started getting interested in poetry particularly and literature more broadly, was the kind of writing that had content and had musicality and linguistic vivacity and all these things that I enjoy and seek to achieve in my own writing. So it's purely just on the basis of what I find most fulfilling. And clearly there is some element in my personality and in my mind that wants to understand experience, that wants to have some ongoing conversation, some ongoing expression of just the strangeness of being alive and working out what people are up to and what things feel like. It's pleasure, and those priorities are somehow deeply in the structure of my personality.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
We've started a new thing on the show in the last few weeks, if you've missed it, where we're getting your help so easy. I can't believe I've not done this for ages, just rely on you for everything. If you've got a writing tip that has changed your working day, something that helps get your ideas down onto the page, that wriggles through that awful writer's block, well, I want to hear about it. And you can fire over your tip to the contact page over at writersroutine.com. Let's see who we've got. Kristen, terrible eyes right now. Kristen from Cardiff. Thanks for getting in touch. Hey, Kristen, like it is in Adam Folds' book. Nice little bit of symmetry there. Anyway, thanks for getting in touch, Kristen. I'm rambling. She says it's all about the early morning. She says if you wake up early, you need to take advantage of that still, the quiet before anyone else has stirred. And then that way, if you get 500 words to 1,000 done before 10 o'clock, say, you've already had a productive day. And maybe, this is quite clever actually, she says maybe you can tap into some of those thoughts that you've dreamed about, you know, when the story is unconsciously working away in your brain overnight. You can quickly lock into those, get them out, write them down. Brilliant, Kristen, great tip, thank you so much. Ollie is on now, Ollie locked away down in Cornwall, and he says it's simple, an internet blocker, like Freedom or Blocksite or anything. Ollie, mate, just turn off your internet. I don't know why we always almost pay for these tools that do something we could do very easily just by pressing the off switch. It's crazy, isn't it, that only like 20 years into solid interneting, already we can't live without it. Ollie, thanks so much for getting in touch. I hope sending that message to me didn't take you away from your story and back onto the internet. Anyway, let's move on. Finally, Moira, who is somewhere near Cork, she says. She says that she took inspiration from our Cecilia Ahern episode a few months ago, and she now writes with a pen. She writes with a pen first, then she copies it up later on the laptop. And she says you'd be shocked at just how much easier your ideas flow when you're working with a pen. It's like you're connected to a page. Moira, I completely understand where you're coming from. If you've got a writing tip, by the way, like Moira, Ollie and Kristen, you can let me know on Twitter. Give us a follow. It's at WritersPod on there. You can DM me on Instagram, WritersRoutine. And you can always head over and let me know on our website.
I am Frank Cottrell-Boyce, children's writer, and my top tip from the bottom of my heart is set yourself a daily word target, not as something to aspire to or to hit, but something to exceed, so that when you go to bed at night, you go to bed having negotiated with yourself what represents a decent day's work, so you don't go to bed with a crushing sense of failure every night, and you don't wake up every morning thinking, I'm going to write my whole novel today. You're not going to say how many words you're going to write. Write them and be happy with yourself.
We had loads more incredible advice like that from Frank in last week's episode. If you missed it and you want to know how Danny Boyle pushed him into writing a novel, what it was like working on the opening ceremony to the Olympic Games in 2012 in London, and why even now, so many novels and screenplays down for Frank, writing for him is still torturously awful. You can find out all about that, catch up with the full episode right now, and send me a tip over at writersroutine.com. Right, let's get back into it then with Adam Folds, this week's guest on the show, talking about his brand new book, Dream Sequence. We'll find out more about the story in this half. We also talk about literary fiction and why that drew him in rather than the more commercial genre-based work. We talk about voice and language, and we start back in the chat chatting about philosophy. You see, earlier on, we were learning about why he writes. What is he hoping to do every time he starts tapping away at his keyboard? Is he hoping to tell a story or figure out something big and world-changing about life? Now, for Adam, we learn it's the latter. So what happens then? What happens when it's all done? What has he found out?
I feel like I've got a lot of stuff together. So I feel like I've taken a tour around something that is inevitably still kind of restless and potentially generative. But I feel like there's, or I aspire to the sensation that there's that I've put a lot of stuff into it, that it has a lot of content. There's a nice interview with Philip Roth a few years ago where he's talking about his great trilogy in the 90s. And he had gone to see a exhibition of Jackson Pollock sort of around the time he was writing those books or after he had written those books. And that sort of energy and all overness and on the canvas, and that sense of incident and detail and all those things that you find in Jackson Pollock, all that excitement. He felt he it sort of made him feel or reminded him of what he was after in the work, and that he had put lots of stuff into it, basically. And that's something to aspire to, the sensation of having got as much of the world into your story as you can.
How does the writing of a novel, this is a horrendously stupid and naive question, I just thought I'd iron that out first. How does the writing of a novel differ in theory rather than practice to writing a poem? Day to day, I suppose that is actually moreover in practice. I mean, you'll sit down at a novel, perhaps you've got to write 100,000 words. You're going to sit there, you know the point that you want it to end, and you'll churn through it over a series of days. Is writing poetry different to that? Is it more capturing a moment?
It is. I mean, there is only really the lightning strike in writing poetry. There is not much you can do in the way of research or editing extensively. You're much more in a moment, a more molten moment of a kind of pure creativity that you then kind of wrestle with and shape perhaps more afterwards. But there's less surround to the act of writing in poetry. It's very direct and short, and therefore you can it's not really a thing you can do full time in the way that you can to some extent be a full-time novelist, because there are things to be getting on with.
Let's talk about the new book, Dream Sequence. Tell me about the very first moment that the idea for this story came into your head. What was the elevator pitch that your brain gave you for this?
Well, it emerged over time. It began with the character of Henry, particularly, who is this young actor, very ambitious, looking to land a part that he is desperate to get and thinks will change his life and career, a part for which he will have to starve himself. So we see him at the beginning in a state of hunger and ambition and expectation. And he, for me, kind of resonated with lots of things that were alive in the culture right now, but around kind of self-creation and image and status anxiety and precarity. An actor's life is a very precarious one, albeit when successful, a very well-rewarded one. So he was the strong kind of beginning of the novel. And then he drew towards him this other character, the other main character of the novel, who is a fan of his, who has met him on one occasion in the past, and has had a sort of kind of religious experience in that moment, where it was revealed to her that the essential law of the universe is love, and that she and Henry have this very particular connection that the universe wants to express, and that she and he therefore need to be together, and she, we understand, is determined to kind of make that come about. Early on, when I had these two, I realised that there was a kind of mythic basis to them, in that they were versions of the Narcissus and Echo figures. And once I had that, I knew that that was something I could plug into, and that was what I wanted to explore and render, was this kind of contemporary version of an Echo and Narcissus story. I plot from character. I quite like the British short story writer, 20th century short story writer, V.S. Pritchett, once said that there is no plot, only character. And you can quote Heraclitus, the ancient Greek philosopher, who said, "A man's character is his fate." So I'm interested in character and psyche and personality. And when you know, though, that, you know how people are, like, imbalanced in the world and what they want and what situations they're going to put themselves in, and that is what generates plot. So out of these two characters in the world and coming together or not, that is where plot comes from. There is also then another layer of kind of machination of wanting to work out how that is exciting and how that ought to be structured. There's a kind of compulsion to read, I think, I hope, towards the end of Dream Sequence, where a sequence of events is unfolding and you're really, you have a sense of kind of oncoming collision and you're not sure what's going to happen. But that, as I say, is generated ultimately out of the characters of Kristen and Henry.
Well, two things with that. Is there a physical form of the sequence of events that these two characters will go on? Are you plotting on a chart somewhere? Do you have post-it notes strewn around your office?
Generally not. I have done that in the past a bit. What I tend to do is write just to keep my bearings and get and remind myself what I want to happen as I'm writing. I will repeatedly stop and write just sort of chapter headings of X in this location, Y meets Z, and this happens, just but like scene notes and putting those in order in a kind of linear headlines of the story format. That tends to be the kind of charting that I will use typically. But yeah, I have used slightly more kind of tabulated forms in the past, but not for quite a while.
And characters, if you're drawing the plot from them, you need to flesh and expand those out pretty thoroughly. How are you doing that? Is it as simple as a brainstorm? Is there something else? Is it all going on inside your head? How does that work?
I ask questions about them and I try to accumulate information about them. So it's notebook work, really. So I like to know them in the way that one understands people generally. So I like to know who their family is. I like to know a bit about their childhoods, what their kind of personality shape is, where they live physically, what their values are, all the things that you might know about a friend that you know well, I like to know about the character. So it's accumulating those things. So often, even if I don't use it, I will often write notes about early experiences of the characters. Actually, in this book, I do use a fair bit of Henry's or some kind of material from Henry's childhood, and you see him interacting with his parents and you get a sense of a bit of why he is the way he is. So, yeah, it's that kind of thing.
With literary fiction like this that's not specifically genre-based, the voice, the tone that you are using to tell the story is so important because there's so much of it. It's not like in a thriller, as I say, where you've got a page worth of a chapter and then the plot is keeping it going. How much thought do you give to the voice that the audience will read this with?
That's an interesting question. I'm not sure I think about it in those terms exactly. I like the, as I say, the prose to be interesting in itself. I like the word choices to be interesting. But I don't want to get in the way. I don't have a strong narrator voice, which I guess is typical of what we call literary fiction now, that you generally don't have a strong editorializing narrative voice in the way that you do in Victorian fiction, in George Eliot and Dickens, for example. So there's a richness, but there's also a transparency that is to do with giving over the perception and to some extent the voice of the novel to the character that you're describing at that time. I mean, I'm looking to improve sentences. I'm looking to find angles and new ways of expressing things. So some of the kind of familiar language of kind of the war against cliche, to use Martin Amis's phrase, I'm looking to avoid The pat and the over familiar.
Talk me through that then, the war against the cliche. If you find yourself, and you have written a dreadful cliche that countless authors have penned before you, what do you do? Delete? Do you sit there for a long, long time thinking of something else?
Kind of. I mean, you immediately get rid of that. I'm writing. Can be the sort of perfect crime in that way, when you're writing your drafts, because nobody need ever know. Yeah, it is a question of just dwelling in the scene and working out what would be fresh and interesting about it. Often it comes from imagining this stuff so deeply that you're making almost a character mistake, a category mistake, and thinking it is real, experiencing it as real, and experiencing it through character. It's the characters, that perceptions that make things fresh and interesting, because if they're real, if they're well drawn, if you're deeply in them, then you see the world as they see them, and we all see the world differently all the time. You know, a person walking down the street sees in the street different things according to who they are. Someone, you know, on a kind of banal level, who needs to buy a car will notice the cars. A young person might notice the attractive young people of the same or opposite sex, whatever. A priest going through a religious crisis will notice a church that is invisible to other people. On a very crude level, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about, is what do the characters see, and if you're in their perceptions, then the world will be alive in a particularly interesting way.
And that is it for this week's Writer's Routine. Thank you so much to Adam for working a little bit of time in his hugely busy diary at the moment. Flew over from Canada and made some time while he was here, which I really appreciate. Thank you so much to Adam for that. You can find out loads more about his work and the new book Dream Sequence right now over at writersroutine.com. Right, so your homework for the week, I've been thinking about it. This is what you need to get done before I chat to you again. Send me your writing tip, please. Something that has helped you get through the day, that helps you work through your writing block, that has helped you get your ideas down. I want to know it. I want to share it with everyone else. I need you to tell me first. You can fire it over to writersroutine.com. Also, part two of your homework, if you've not left us a review yet, please do so. It takes a few minutes of your day. Head over to Apple Podcasts, if that's how you are listening. Search for Writer's Routine, and it would help if you gave us 5 stars. Now, next week, we're chatting to the thriller author, Sarah Pinborough. It's a brilliant chat as well. Quite rambly, but really inspiring and insightful. I'll see you then. Can't wait for it. Sarah Pinborough, next week on Writer's Routine.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.